The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The fragile peace in the Middle East could already be in jeopardy. President Donald Trump has warned that Israel could resume fighting if Hamas breaches the ceasefire and neglects the return of the bodies of Israeli hostages. I'm joined on the line now by military analyst, former fighter pilot, co-host of the Red Matrix podcast, Sean Bell, to talk about all of this. Sean, good morning.
Good morning to you, Pat.
I refer to it as a fragile peace, and everyone is on tenterhooks to see what breaches might be sufficient for the whole thing to collapse. And there are some breaches, it would appear, on both sides.
Yes, I mean, I think fragile is an entirely correct term here. There was a great deal of hope, wasn't there, that the war was finally over. But the expectation is that neither side is really comfortable with the very fragile peace. It is being imposed in a way by President Trump, and therefore neither side is fully bought in, I suspect, to the peace process. Why do I say that? Because ultimately, Israel is pretty clear. It doesn't want Hamas part of the Gaza governance or any sense of fighting there. But the Palestinians clearly want a Palestinian state. And at the moment, there is no clear route to that. And as you say, whilst that fragility exists, any minor issues which are already causing concerns, particularly the hostages and, as you say, the Rafah crossing.
The Rafah crossing yet to be opened, it would appear. They're preparing for the opening of it. Now, people will say, why don't you just throw it open? But the truth is they're going to inspect everything going in. They're going to have to put those kind of checkpoints in place. There's no doubt they will do that. And that, I mean, anyone waiting at Dover, for example, to get across to Calais at a busy time will understand that these processes do take time.
They do, Pat, but I wouldn't. This has been a well-trodden path, hasn't it? We're talking about 500 trucks a day used to go in a steady state. So there's a very well-worn routine that the Israelis can check this stuff. I think what's actually happening here is that there is suspicion that Hamas, they did release all of the live hostages as they had promised to do, but of the 28 dead hostages, my understanding is that 9 have so far been released, and there are 19 that still have not, and therefore that's in breach of the agreement, which the deadline for that came on Monday this week. Now, the practical bit of this is that I've had some experience of dead bodies on operations, and of course you're talking about over 2 years this war has been raging. It's not entirely unreasonable that some of the hostages' bodies may be very badly decomposed, some of them may be under rubble. What is not clear to me is why Hamas would have agreed to release them all if they didn't know where all of them were.
I presume there was some negotiation between Hamas and some of the other groups within the Gaza Strip about how many have you got, or who do you have, or how do you know? And presumably they got some assurances that they could account for the hostages they promised. But maybe those assurances have not now been realized.
Well, again, I mean, we're never going to know the details of that. I suspect that clearly for the Israeli families, it's just as important whether dead or alive to get their bodies back. I would imagine that most of the focus initially by the Israelis have been getting on the live hostages back. And they've been the key bit of leverage that Hamas has had against Israel. And I was one of the skeptics that was not entirely sure the live, all the hostages would be released, but they were. I think the fact is that neither the Israelis nor the Palestinians, the Hamas, they're both deeply suspicious of each other. And the danger is it would only take one minor issue, one rocket to be fired by an errant group in Gaza, or Israel taking a front and saying, right, you have not met the terms and conditions. And suddenly we descend straight back into conflict again, because the harsh reality here, unfortunately, Pat, is that President Trump's intervention hasn't solved the problem. Mm. What it's done is it's brought a ceasefire. A lasting peace requires a lot more in place. Even President Trump admits that, and we're a long way away from establishing that yet.
Now, he said Hamas have got to disarm, and if they don't do it voluntarily, we will do it for them, and it may be done violently. I'm paraphrasing his words. So who's we? We has got to be the IDF, because Americans are not going in there.
Well, what you talk to here is obviously the first phase of this was to get the hostages out. And then the subsequent phases of this sort of 20-point plan that President Trump had come up with, one of those was an interim stabilization force, because nature abhors a vacuum. And at the moment, you've stopped the fighting. You've told Hamas to disarm. But who therefore runs Gaza? And of course, there are a number of groups in Gaza that are now vying for power, because whatever happens next, it's likely to be a big rebuilding task. If you've seen any of the video of Gaza, it's decimated. That will be billions, literally billions of dollars flowing in. And there'll be quite a number of those militant groups that see that as a great opportunity. So this interim stabilization force, which apparently might be made of several Middle East countries, but it doesn't seem to have made a great deal of progress yet. And every day that goes by without some form of structure and governance and, some sort of military organization there means that it's likely to just keep descending back into chaos again.
Now, the determination by certain members of the Israeli cabinet, the defense minister, for instance, to pursue the destruction of all the tunnels in Gaza City, and that will involve ordnance, and any kind of activity like that is bound to cause dissatisfaction, disaffection with the whole process among the Palestinians.
It is. I mean, what you talk to, I mean, literally the Gaza Metro, which is that labyrinth of hundreds of miles of tunnels underneath Gaza. I suspect even the Hamas leadership don't know where all of them are. It'll be an incredibly difficult task to destroy those, and actually could end up eroding the foundations of a lot of the buildings in Gaza. I think it might be an aspiration to stop those, but it frankly, they've been built because it's not difficult to tunnel underneath Gaza. And even if you fill them all in, they will gradually come back again, because quite frankly, that's given that Hamas an asymmetric advantage in its fight against Israel. I think what they're talking about here, though, is if you find a lasting peace, if you find a way of giving hope and prosperity to the Palestinians, then there wouldn't be this petri dish of folks trying to rise up and giving oxygen to groups like Hamas and others that present a threat to Israel. So I do think the danger is we look at the details rather than the big picture. The big picture is how on earth does President Trump lead the international community to a position where it's actually in the interests of both sides to maintain a lasting peace.
Now, it's hard to know what the feeling of the population of Gaza is, simply because they've been under such, bombardment and starvation and all the other vicissitudes they've had to put up with for the past 2 years. It's hard to know how they feel about Hamas. Is there any way we can get a sense of what the general population might think?
Well, Pat, this has been long vexed me as a military guy. You know, you think that Israel should actually be doing a counterinsurgency to try to separate Hamas from the Palestinian people. You know, you imagine you were a family, a father with children in Gaza. It must be a just horrendous situation. And the danger is you would blame Hamas for this, and therefore you would imagine that they'd be really keen to rid themselves of Hamas and see a brighter future. But I think the danger here is we underestimate the difficulties that the Palestinians have endured ever since the formation of the Israeli state. And that's why they still see a clear route to having a two-state solution as being the answer. And at the moment, it's pretty clear that Prime Minister Netanyahu doesn't see that as a future option. And therefore, one might expect that some of the people in Gaza might think that what was the last 2 years for if we don't actually get a clear path to that? And to be fair, President Trump has alluded to that in his 20-point plan. But unfortunately, presentationally, President Trump is the one who's imposed this peace, but he is clearly representing America that is on the side of the Israelis. And therefore, where is the counterbalance, grand strategic advisor, the country, the Middle East country that's operating with Trump to actually make sure that Palestinians' needs and desires are also reflected in whatever that deal? If they don't get that in place, I regret that we'll probably be talking about this again in months or years ahead.
Now, Israel also returned the bodies of the dead to Palestinian families, and there are stories that the living and the dead may have been subjected to torture in Israeli detention. What impact are those stories, be they true or false, likely to have?
Yes, I think we're going to hear a lot of these sort of stories. There's lots of things emerging, as particularly because most journalists have been into Gaza. You know, there have been some, but no Western-affiliated journalists. I think we're going to hear a lot of stories from both sides, and some of them will make very difficult listening. I have to say, as a military guy, you know, I think it's best to try to navigate away from those stories for now, because there's lots of people who, with different agendas, the Palestinians are trying to demonstrate how bad the Israelis are. The Israelis are trying to demonstrate how bad Hamas are. I think the focus needs to be on how on earth you capitalize on this ceasefire, because the visceral hatred between the two sides, they were not going to stop without somebody stepping in. Trump has stepped in. Now the conversation needs to be focused in: what does the future look like? What are the ways to navigate through a very, very difficult next few stages to try to create a unique opportunity for lasting peace? Clinton and Yasser Arafat from the PLO, you know, 25 years ago tried it. It failed. It is not easy to do. And therefore, it would require a hell of a lot of effort. That will not be helped by looking backwards. The international community now needs to focus on looking forwards.
The stories around the deal between Yasser Arafat and Clinton, which was almost a done deal. There's a story that I heard years ago that Yasser Arafat prepared to sign off on this. And then someone approached him from his own side and said, "You signed this, you're a dead man." And then it never happened.
Yes, and I think, I mean, again, as a bit of a student of military history, you look at that and think, we never know what happened in the dark and hallowed halls. But again, if you look at that from the PLO perspective, they were trying to do a deal with Israel and America. And again, I reiterate, America is on the side. It is the strategic guarantor of security for Israel, and therefore it can't be seen as it is partisan. It is going to be looking after Israel's interests, and therefore it's really difficult. Just the picture of having President Clinton looking, despite his best efforts, he had to have somebody looking after the Palestinian side as well in that negotiation. And I think the lessons of history, if that is not corrected, I understand why President Trump wants to be seen to be the guy who's imposed this peace. But unless you have a balance to it, unless you have the Palestinian side adequately reflected in that senior negotiation, my worry is that actually we're destined to follow repeat the lessons of history.
And I suppose finally, you've got to look at what Trump has done to the US government. I'm not talking about the temporary shutdown, which will eventually come to an end, but what he's done in terms of gutting people from every department, including the State Department, which of course is the Department of Diplomacy, where you'd have career diplomats who may fall foul of Trump. And you question whether or not the expertise is still there within the State Department to navigate this whole process successfully and sensitively.
Well, Pat, I think you pick on a very, very interesting point. You know, that do you start this process with a whole load of diplomacy and then gradually evolve a solution? Well, Trump has done it completely the opposite way around. He's waded in there. He has forced the hand of Prime Minister Netanyahu and forced a ceasefire. The problem is that only works if you can back it up with the huge amount of diplomacy required to find the compromises that will inevitably need to be woven into any sort of agreement. And however unpalatable some of those might be, that is the way to negotiate a lasting peace. It's not a deal. It is going to be diplomacy. And it'll be interesting to see whether, yes, all credit to the President Trump for bringing this immediate ceasefire into play. But let's not kid ourselves. This is the first step of a very long road. And history suggests it's a lot harder than it looks.
Sean Bell, military analyst, former fighter pilot, co-host of the Red Matrix podcast. Sean, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.